You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Ladies and gentlemen, the playoffs are here. Toronto fans are excited and gathered today to watch their team in an important playoff game. Facing an old rival, a curse that has lasted for a long, long time was finally broken. We're here to talk. Oh, wait. This is On the Power Play with Ben Kerr and Colton Prail. Things haven't gone quite as good for the Maple Leafs as they've gone for the Raptors, but the playoffs are here and we're ready to talk about it. Colton, how you doing?
Wonderful. Now that Toronto's having a less than stellar day.
I think I saw a meltdown on Leafs Twitter in the first period.
It was fantastic.
There were calls to fire Babcock. There were calls to fire Shanahan. There were people saying that John Tavares needs to be signed this summer. It was total meltdown in that first period for the Leafs. That game just ended. The Leafs are down 2-0 in the series now. They lost 7-3 tonight. David Pastrnak with 6 points. What are your impressions of the first two games of this Boston-Toronto series?
The Leafs aren't this bad. Let's preface it with that. The Leafs are not this bad. That said, good Lord, the Leafs look terrible. They are getting thoroughly outclassed. It's not just bad goaltending or unfortunate penalties, you know, because they've had their share of power plays, but the number one power play that they had coming into this, the 44% in their last however many games it was power play, is nowhere to be found. They're getting shut down heavily by Boston penalty kill. Auston Matthews looks like he hasn't even shown up. I'm not sure he boarded the flight to Boston because he's been missing both games. Nikita Zaitsev is, I saw it on Twitter today, Russian John Moore, and that about fits the script. He's terrible, and he's getting blown by frequently by Pastrnak, who's had a heck of a performance. That line, now that they're back, is just dominating. Torrey Krug has looked phenomenal. Charlie McAvoy getting top minutes and really has done fine so far, but hasn't played to his full potential either. I mean, this is just Boston walking over the Maple Leafs. And yes, their goaltending will improve, but they're getting thrashed. They don't even look like they're in it.
It's one line, though, that's destroying them. It really is. I saw a stat from game one. I haven't looked at any of the advanced stats from game two, but it would not surprise me if they are similar. Morgan Rielly was matched up against that top line in game one.
Yes.
And it was 32 shot attempts against and 3 shot attempts for Morgan Rielly in game one. They're getting run over to a degree that I haven't seen. There's one other series where this is actually happening as well. There are two series where a team is getting run over to a degree that doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, in the other series, and we'll get to that one, their whole team is getting run over that way. But in this Toronto series, it's one line just destroying the Auston Matthews line, completely destroying whatever defensive pair they're put up against. The Bergeron-Krejci and Marchand line is running roughshod in this series. They have 20 points between the three of them in two games. Pastrnak has 9 points in two games, 6 points tonight. It's absolutely incredible what that line's doing.
Yeah, they've been outstanding. On that Morgan Rielly stat, it was a Corsi against per 60 of over 100.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it was ugly, and it was more of the same tonight. Not from Rielly per se. I mean, he wasn't stellar, but just anybody who got matched up against them, it was just ugly. They are a fantastic team. And what I don't get is how slow they are to box out Pastrnak when he's one behind the net and two when he comes out in front of the paint. I mean, it's the same move every time. Two steps, turn, shoot.
Yeah.
And he gets them repeatedly on it. You know, he had so much time on his hat trick goal, but even his first goal, where he got at the backhand, was just like way too much time in front. He was able to pull it down and get the shot off. Like, yeah, it was an excellent play from Pastrnak, undoubtedly. But there's no way that in the NHL playoffs he should have the time and space to do that where he was on the ice. He should be getting bullied off the puck. And I know this is... I don't want this to come across as Toronto needs to get bigger and stronger, because I don't think that's the case. I would love to see them try it, but I don't think that's the case. That said, they needed to play bigger and stronger in that moment and throughout this series, because they're getting run rampant over.
Yeah, and they just need to get the puck. They're getting pinned deep. Teams realize where the weakness is in Toronto, and that's their defenseman. And their forwards are really good, and I mean they scored three goals tonight. But their defense is just getting run over. And you know what? People are gonna talk about advanced stats and Corsi. I think the Corsi in game one is actually gonna be worse than the Corsi in game two.
Yeah, well, Toronto looked better to start, and they were in it a little more at the end. But they were down 4-0 within the first period, so it doesn't really.
Yeah. That was exactly the point I was going to bring up. I mean, Don Cherry was on after the game, and I saw like 2 seconds of it before I turned it off and we went to. And he's talking about, well, you know, the Leafs looked so much better after that first period. They dominated the second and this and that. And I'm like, yeah, but it was 4-0 already. I expect, you know, a team to... We all know about score effects at this point. I know Don does.
We've named score effects at this point, you know? Like,
yeah, like... That's expected to happen when it's 4-0. You just... It's just natural. And I don't think it means a heck of a lot for the next game. I don't think it means a lot. What means more is that the Leafs are at home and... can maybe get Austin Matthews away from Patrice Bergeron a little bit more. That may make a difference. But I don't think that the second period push that the Leafs put on means anything for Game 3 or Game 4.
No, I'm with you on that. This was just what we saw. And even during that second period push, in the third period, the second the Leafs got close, Boston was able to have their way with them, you know? Yeah. And again, it was the Pastrnak-Bergeron line. But more than that, because while that line has been so effective at cycling, Boston's having no issue, one, getting pucks deep, and two, sending zone-to-zone passes, you know, blue-line-to-blue-line passes. Their transition game has been so much better than the Maple Leafs, especially defensively.
And, I mean, and the shots against as well. I mean, again, when we talk about things like Corsi, I would look more at expected goals and scoring chances for this game, because the Bruins may not be getting the majority of the shots, but I feel like they are getting a lot of shots in close to the net, a lot of scoring chances that the Leafs just are not getting on Tuukka Rask.
At the end of the first period, the Leafs had a 65% Corsi for and a 44.4% scoring chances for. Boston had, I think it was 4 high danger scoring chances. The Leafs had 1.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's exactly what... I haven't looked up the stats, but
that's
exactly
off the top of my head.
What I'm seeing in... seeing happen in the game, just watching it. I think it's an interesting discussion, because I think knowing advanced stats and knowing all that has changed my own eye test.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
I mean, over the last, you know, 5-6 years, following the advanced stats has changed what I look. People always say eye test versus advanced stats, and I think I've always said it's a combination of the two.
It has to be.
But I think knowing the advanced stats has changed what I look for in an eye test.
Oh, yeah. No, I 100% agree with that. And it's just – it's simpler to see too. You look at where teams are driving those shot attempts from, and if I want to skip over to the Maple Leafs power play for a second, they're generating a lot of that 5-on-4 offense from the blue line, which is fine if you're getting people like JVR in front, but the Bruins were doing a really good job boxing them out. They were taking away the cross-ice pass, and they were boxing them out pretty well, and those shots were a little dangerous at times, but not overly so. You know, the power play did not look as threatening as it had even at season's end.
But that's the thing. That's the difference that you point out. You say the Leafs were getting a lot of shots from the point. Certainly they were. You're absolutely 100% right on that. But the power play at the end of the season was dominating teams down low.
Yeah, it was the high-low pass and the cross-crease pass.
Yeah, it wasn't the pass back to the point and shoot. It wasn't the what I call the Shea Weber power play.
Obviously, there are a few teams that do that well, and Nashville was the benchmark for the longest time.
Yeah, no, obviously, and you can do that well if you get traffic in front and a guy with a big point shot and you get the goalie moving east-west on a pass across. That was good. The power play that Andre Markov and Sheldon Surrey, or Andre Markov and Mark Strait used to run in Montreal, ran that way as well. And then Kovalev on the sideboards, and that was very effective with three men high. You can do it, but that just it's not about whether you can or you can't do it. It's about the identity of the Leafs team, and the Leafs team is not that identity. It's not Jake Gardner running the point on the power play. It's down low JVR and Tyler Bozak and Nazem Kadri, and on the second unit with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner on the first unit as well, making those passes. That's the identity of the Leafs power play. It's not the point play. And so if the Bruins are limiting them to the point play, I think that's a very good coaching by the Bruins and very good analysis and isolation and taking away the Leafs' strengths.
And speaking of that, and I don't know if it's something the Bruins are doing well or if he's just not been able to get himself into the game. I think we have to talk a little bit about Austin Matthews. I know I brought him up at the start, but he's just been a non-factor. You know, of the least skilled players, who has been the best? Maybe Mitch Marner? Maybe?
Tyler Bozak had some points tonight. Tyler Bozak's going to be somebody's second-line center next year.
I know. That's crazy to think of. Like, I like Tyler Bozak. I think he's a good third-line center. But it's crazy to me that he's going to play in someone's top six after watching what he did in Toronto with Phil Kessel beside him.
There's just so few centers. It's just so hard to find.
Anyways, back to the point.
It's so hard to find a center as I cry in the corner.
But anyway. I mean, Toronto's skill players, they just haven't been there. They've been taken out of the game.
The most noticeable Leaf tonight was Kasperi Kapanen.
Yeah.
And that's great for Kasperi Kapanen, but that's bad news for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Zach Hyman and Kasperi Kapanen cannot be back-to-back players of the game for your team.
No.
In a playoff series.
No.
It's just that simple.
No, and it's great to see them play well, but Your best players have to be your best players. It's cliche, but it's true. And I think Bergeron has totally erased Austin Matthews in these first two games, while also being leading an offensive juggernaut of a line.
I mean, if there's a silver lining for the Leafs, McElhinney didn't look terrible. He didn't look good, but he didn't look terrible.
Gave up four.
Four. Yeah.
Still gave up four. And didn't play the whole game.
Yeah. Nope.
So I don't know if that much
it's of a stretch.
I don't know how much of a silver
it's
lining.
It's a real stretch.
Yeah. I think the silver lining is you're going home and that may make a difference for getting Austin Matthews going in this series.
Mitch Marner had 2 points. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
That's the silver lining. It's tough to pick from. You're right. You're going home. You're going to be able to line match better. I think there's a serious question to be asked about why Babcock was matching Hainsey against the Bergeron line to start. I get what he's thinking, but...
Who's your right defense?
Dermott?
Who's your right defense to match up against that line? You've got to choose between Hainsey, Zaitsev, and Dermott. That's your choice on the right.
Yeah.
And Connor Carrick and Roman Polak.
No, I mean, that's maybe you go Dermott. Or at least try it, you know?
Yeah, and I saw late in the game... he tried Jake Gardner and Morgan Riley together, and David Pastrnak scored.
Yeah.
So I think pretty much
unchecked.
Yeah, and I think he's looking for answers at right defense, which everyone has pointed out has been a problem for the Toronto Maple Leafs for this entire season. It has been an issue. Who is their top four right defense? You know, their first pairing right defense, and that's just where you are with if you're Mike Babcock. I can understand why he went with Ron Hainsey, because it's the best choice of a bad group.
That's fair. And that's a fair complaint. It just felt like, maybe it's just me overvaluing him, but I feel like Travis Dermott gives them a little more mobility and ability to get out of the zone, even if it's just a stretch pass or a little more creativity. You know, he lacks the strength that Hainsey has, but I just figured maybe he would be able to jumpstart the attack a little more against that line than Hainsey can. Either way, you've got a terrible choice.
I mean, it's a lot. I can see why Mike Babcock's thinking it's a lot to ask a 21-year-old defenseman in his second ever playoff game with less than half a season of NHL experience to go up against one of the top lines in the NHL.
Yeah, no, it's a big ask no matter what.
And a coach like Babcock always is going to favor his vets in that situation. He's naturally going to start a series with his veterans in that role. That's just the way he is. And it's a way most coaches in the NHL are, right or wrong. That's just something that may change as analytics departments get better and as people... But experience still seems to matter to coaches, perhaps more than it should.
It's the trust factor. I think, you know, they trust those players. They trust them to get it done, regardless of whether or not they will or can. They trust them because they know them. You know, he spent a lot more time with Ron Hainsey than he has with Travis Dermott.
Yes, and he watched Ron Hainsey win a Stanley Cup last year.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. So I don't know. I think the Leafs going home will be a better team than they've looked so far. I still think Boston takes this one, especially now that they're up to nothing.
Yeah.
It's like an 89-88% that they win.
I think it's a 5-game series, to be honest.
Yeah, I had it Bruins 7 to start this, but yeah,
I had the Bruins in 6 to start things, but I think it's a 5-game series now. The way I've seen them dominate.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe it goes 6 if we get 2-2, but yeah, it's not looking good. Yeah, you want to move over to the other series, though, that's been equally entertaining, if not equally lopsided?
Yeah, Minnesota and Winnipeg. Just an absolute thorough thrashing by all four lines of the Winnipeg Jets against all four lines of the Minnesota Wild. You know, game one was close, and their late Joe Morrow goal, and, you know, even Minnesota even had a third period lead. But it was game one was all Devan Dubnyk keeping it close. Game two was a 1-0 lead in after two periods, and then so the goals started going in the third. But at one point, the Jets, I believe it was nearly, it was something like 45-15 in shots. Minnesota went a full 20 minutes between the end of the second period, the last 10 minutes of the second period, and the first 10 minutes of the third without a shot on net. They barely possessed the puck. They were just, Winnipeg was first on every single loose puck. They just were such a faster skating team than the Minnesota Wild in these first two games.
The Wild did a really good job shutting down the middle of the ice in game one. It didn't happen in game two, and they got run over. And you always knew speed was going to play a factor in this one, because even the Jets' older players, think of like a Blake Wheeler, and I say older with some, you know, credence there. You know, Blake Wheeler, Brian Little, even to a certain extent, Dustin Byfuglien, they're not slow.
Yeah.
They're not slow. They're not lacking size either, with the exception of Little. I mean, this is a team that will run you down. And when you've got guys like Kyle Connor and even a Joel Armia, Patrick Laine, I mean, they are going to get your motor going. And if you look up and down that Minnesota lineup, they don't have the speed. Eric Staal was their best player, and he's not going to be able to do that.
No, and even Brian Little, 6'1".
Yeah.
I mean, he's not... people get maybe confused by the last name, but he's no Nick.
He's like a thin 6'1". It's true. Yeah. He's not Nick. He's like a little small though. You know, like a size wise.
Yeah. For those who don't know, Nick Hendrickson is our other ME at Last Word on Hockey, and last year he posted a picture of himself beside Sam Gagner, and Sam Gagner had. A good 2 or 3 inches on Nick, I would say.
Sam Gagner in shoes. Let's preface this.
Yeah.
Not in skates.
No, Sam Gagner, he saw him at the airport. Yeah, at an airport. And Sam Gagner had a good 2-3 inches on him. So we've
made our little Matt Zuccarello.
And so we've made fun of Nick's height ever since. The Jets just seem faster than a team with Eric Staal. I'm surprised how well Matt Dumba's the only one who's really shown any ability at the defensive end for the Wild in this series. They really do miss Ryan Suter in the series, but I don't even think Ryan Suter would be enough to stop the wave after wave after wave of Winnipeg Jets attacks that are just coming at them.
No, I expected a lot more out of Jared Spurgeon in this series. I really rate his play. I really, really like him, but he has not looked as good as he can be this year.
Yeah.
Or this year, as I should say.
And I mean, we talked about the Leafs series and going home and how that was going to make a difference for Toronto. I don't think that it makes a big difference for Minnesota and Winnipeg. I really don't. I think in Toronto's case, you can make the case that it's one line utterly dominating and that getting some matchups might help. In the Winnipeg-Minnesota series, I don't see it as one line. I see it as it's shift after shift after shift after. I mean, they went 20 minutes without a shot. So they're just...
It's a wait.
Yeah, it's just it's the Shifley line, and then it's the Stastny line, and then it's the Little line, and then, you know, come back you go run through your top nine again, and the odd shift with the fourth line in there still keeps it going. It's just the only thing that Minnesota generated yesterday from what I saw was when they were on the power play. They got the first five shots of the game. They came out really well. But then after that, the only thing they generated was on a power play.
It just goes to show how valuable center depth is in today's day and age. If you have someone who can drive play and drive a line, you're solid. And I mean, look at the list of those three centers: Brian Little, Mark Scheifele, Paul Stastny. I mean, these are all arguably top six players, and very recently have been first line players.
Yes, you know, the last time the Winnipeg Jets made the playoffs, which was not that long ago when they were swept by Anaheim, Brian Little was their first line center. He was the first line center of a playoff team.
Yep.
So, and now he's their third line
center. It's that simple. The depth on Winnipeg is disgusting, and that's how they're getting it done.
And just
you want to talk about
there's one more thing I want to talk about while we're on the topic of center depth.
Sure.
Winnipeg ran over them. The faceoff percentage was 70% wins by the Minnesota Wilds.
Yep.
Faceoffs. If you ever need a better example that faceoff percentage and faceoff wins mean nothing or next to nothing, I'm not going to quite say nothing because there are times when you need to win a faceoff, but mean next to nothing and it is one of the most overrated stats in the NHL. Put on that game, game two of that series, 70% faceoff wins. And absolutely run over on the ice.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
So, all right, let's move on to another series. Where should we go next? Another
team. I think in Colorado, Nashville.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because with today's game, like, that was a lot closer than I expected it to be. And the first game wasn't exactly a blowout.
The score looks worse than it was because the three third period goals.
Yeah. Colorado's put up a much better fight.
But, I mean, you see the class in a guy like Nathan MacKinnon in this series. I think he's terrific. I really am a big fan of Tyson Barrie. I've long been a big Tyson Barrie booster on this show, even before... with my old co-host used to make fun of me for that, how big a Tyson Barrie fan I was. I'm a big Tyson Barrie backer. And Colorado's doing all this without Eric Johnson, who might be their second best defenseman in my book. Some would say their best defenseman.
And without their number one goalie.
Yeah, that as well. Although Bernier's played very, very well for them.
Yes, he has.
And so, Nashville's not running them over the way they ran over the Blackhawks in round one last year. They totally dominated that series in another 1-8 matchup where they were the number eight. Now as the number one, they're not having quite as easy a time with the Colorado Avalanche, who snuck into the playoffs on the last day of their regular season.
I think they should have won today, or this game, I should say, game two, a little more. Like, the scoreline doesn't really reflect it. I don't think Rene played outstanding today.
No.
MacKinnon's backhander especially, I thought was weak, and he just didn't wow me as much as he has all season.
And after they got up 2-1 and 3-1, I mean, the Avs never got it tied. They kept staying close, but they never got it to a tie game. It was always two goals and one goal and two goals and one goal. They didn't seem like they were ever going to take that step to really tie this game up.
No, that's just it. At the end of the day, Nashville was the better team, and they played it and they looked it. But Colorado can at least go home with their heads held high, despite being down 2-0.
I think in some ways the first two series that we've talked about are clouding our view of how close this Nashville-Colorado series is at this point.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
They
may be at the same score, but it's very different.
Yeah, that it's not quite a team getting run over the way we've seen the Leafs and the Wild get run over. And so that's kind of what's happening in Nashville. Still seeing a PK Subban coming to play in playoff series.
He had a monstrous block today.
Yeah,
right in the gut, right in front of Rene.
Yeah. Ooh. He had another big block that led to a breakaway goal for Ryan Johansson.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, and I think overall he was. I know I hate this stat in over the course of the season, but I think on an individual game it can be all right. He was a +3 today.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean,
no, he had a solid performance today.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I hate the plus minus stat, but for an individual game, it can be illustrative of some things.
Yeah, to a certain extent, he's just been solid, and most of Nashville's core, defensive core, I should say, has been so far. I'm liking what I'm seeing out of them. I'm not sold yet, especially for a team that I think a lot of us had pegged as a Stanley Cup contender, if not a Stanley Cup winner. Not sold on that yet, but I have faith that they'll pick it up as they go on.
Yeah, through two games in each series, if things hold to form, both teams having 2-0 leads, Winnipeg and Nashville is going to be a lot of fun.
It's the series I'm most looking forward to, followed closely by a Tampa-Boston series, because Tampa has run roughshod over the Devils so far.
Yeah, Tampa has totally dominated. Tampa has looked like they've gotten over that late season hangover, whatever that was going on in Tampa. The kind of, are we collapsing? Are we not collapsing? Are we, just middling through the end of the year? They don't look like that team anymore. They look like the team from October and November and December all over again. So that's another series that, we should get into. Tampa, Steven Stamkos is back. Kucherov's back. You see Tyler Johnson and that line putting things together. Braden Point with a goal today. They're just a deep, fast hockey team as well. And New Jersey's a fast hockey team. That's kind of been their calling card all season. But as fast as that series is, you just feel like Tampa's always the more dangerous team, the one more likely to finish on their chances.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing it in the defense, really. I mean, Ben Lovejoy, Sammy Vatanen, John Moore, these are not guys that can play to the level of a Braden Point on the second line. He's just going to beat them repeatedly, as he has.
I like Sammy Vatanen, though.
I do too, but I mean, he's getting paired up against Stamkos and Kucherov, and that's a tough ask.
Yeah, no, and who's his partner right now? I can't even. It's not like
Severson.
Yeah, it's not like he's getting I like Sammy Vatanen in the
that
way I like Ryan.
Is pretty cool.
Yeah, I like Sammy Vatanen in a role like Ryan Ellis, where he's sitting beside Roman Josi and PK Subban's on the next pair with Matthias Ekholm, and he can generate offense for the blue line, and he's got a lot of help around him. But Vatanen,
I'm with you.
In Anaheim had that. In New Jersey, he doesn't. He doesn't have. He's got to be the horse, the number one defenseman, and he's not quite that. He's an excellent top four defenseman with three other defensemen who are good.
Yeah, it's pretty much that simple.
He can't be the number one guy, and that's what Jersey's asking for right now. We've said Jersey's had a weaker defense, and that's something they're going to have to keep addressing going forward. As good as the Will Butcher pickup was, trading for Vatanen, I think, was a good move, but they can't be done on that defense. Ben Lovejoy should not
be. Sure, Vatanen's playing with the... No, he shouldn't be. And Vatanen's playing with Green. I felt the need to correct that.
Okay.
Will Butcher, I feel like, could be better than the third defender, though. Or the sixth defender.
Yeah.
I've liked what I've seen out of him so far. And he's better than John Moore.
Yes. And he's better than Ben Lovejoy.
Well, he's paired with Ben Lovejoy right now.
It's tough ass.
It's just ugly. That outside of Taylor Hall, there's not a lot to love about that team.
No.
I mean, Taylor Hall made a... Sorry, go ahead.
It'd be interesting to see what they do in net. Do they go back to a goaltender who has not won a game in 2018 to start game three?
That's a tough question. That's a really... I mean, he had a great glove save, but... Is that the right choice? I mean, he's a good goalie at the end of the day.
He played over a period, didn't give up a goal. I think confidence has been his biggest issue throughout this time since he came back from his injury with Corey Schneider, we're talking about, obviously, if you haven't figured that out. But he hasn't won a game in 2018. And that's a little bit of a crazy stat for a team that made the playoffs, to think that the guy who started their season doesn't win a game in more than
two
half.
His last 14 something.
Yeah. To think that you made the playoffs with that's kind of crazy. But I think Corey Schneider is their number one goaltender next season, so I think you might as well throw him in there.
Right. If we weren't talking about Corey Schneider, I would feel differently about this. But he's proven himself to be one of the top goalies in the league fairly consistently. You know, he's backstopped Team USA multiple times. He played really well when he was in Vancouver. And he's been one of the saving graces for the Devils in the pre-Hall years. All in all, I think, you know, you're allowed to have a little leeway. Yes, he hasn't played great since his return from injury, but at the end of the day, he's still Corey Schneider. And in a big moment like this, if I've got to go back to him in the playoffs, it's not the end of the world.
I think I've got to go with him because, I mean, Keith Kincaid, as well as he's played well by being slightly above average. He's not been elite. In his play either. Even his good play has been just above average play. And so I think I've got to go back to Corey Schneider because, you know what, I really am going, if I'm going to win four of the next five games in this series to take this series, I am going to need some elite goaltending play to make that happen. And my only chance is with
and Corey Schneider. You're a lot more likely.
Yeah.
That's just it. Corey Schneider gives you at least a chance at that. And it's a big ask, no matter what. Do you want to go into one of the more intriguing series so far?
Sure.
Philly-Pittsburgh. What the heck's going on there?
I don't know. Two interesting games. Game one... Pittsburgh comes out and just runs over the Flyers, 7-0. Sidney Crosby gets a hat trick. Brian Elliott does not look good. And it's total domination for the Penguins. Game two, the Flyers reverse the trend and win 4-0. So now we're headed back to Philly. You've got to think advantage Flyers taking... one of the first two games. I mean, that's always that always to me is an advantage to the road team in a series if you can get a split of the first two games. And so I don't know if they'll win the series.
Taking out Chris Letang too.
Yeah, although he's flown to Philadelphia and he's expected to play in game three.
Okay.
I saw that
he flew.
Elliot Friedman is saying he's expected to at least suit up for warm-ups for game three.
Okay. Interesting.
He took a heck of a hit I don't think it was intentional by Claude Giroux by any means, but it was still a heck of a collision, and Letang went flying. He was skating full
Let's
speed.
Talk about that.
He was skating.
Why don't you think it was intentional?
Because Giroux was coming off a hit from a Penguins player and didn't seem to be in control of his body.
To me, that looked like a classic PK Subban, Nick Cronwell hit.
Yeah, I can see where it looks that way. And it definitely does look like the butt check. But to me, it looked like Giroux wasn't intentionally doing a butt check. It just kind of happened when he was out of control from being hit himself.
Possibly. I think he found himself in a situation where he was going to get nailed by Letang and just tried to make the most of it and protect himself. And he ended up, I don't think Letang ever saw it coming.
No,
because Letang was going to steamroll into the back of him.
Yeah, Letang never saw that hit coming, that's for sure. He seemed to skate head down right into it.
Yeah.
And just went flying afterwards.
I would have been okay with a bit of supplemental discipline. Not three games like Kadri, but a game I would have been okay with. Because that was brutal.
I think it's a hard one to determine that it's intentional on.
That's fair. That is very fair.
And especially, I mean, the Kadri one, you got three games. I think a big reason for the three games is the suspension history of Nazem Kadri.
Yeah.
I think that's
he has a history.
I think that's one game if it's a first-time offender. You saw Tom Wilson didn't get a game. We saw Josh Anderson didn't get a game. And so I don't know. I think that the history and reputation of Nazem Kadri is really what did him in.
And good. It was an ugly hit. And I'm not a fan of that portion of his game. I like a lot of the things he does, but he is a dirty player.
Yeah, there's no need for that. There's no need for that. So so where do we think this Philly-Pittsburgh series is going? Even with the split, I still think Pittsburgh's the favorite, but I do think the split was something that Philadelphia needed to do. It's checkmark one on anatomy of an upset.
Yeah, no, for sure. And they have the quality to do it if Brian Elliott plays as well as he can. My money's still on Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. Too
I think I had it in five games. Maybe it bumps to six.
Yeah. Too deep for me, the Penguins. Philly feels like a one-line team at times. And that line is as good as any line in the NHL. I mean, they're as good as that Bruins line. That Giroux and Voracek and Couturier line, as good as any in the NHL, but it feels like at times they're a one-line forward group. Wayne Simmonds provides a little bit on the second line. Nolan Patrick started to come into his own. But, I mean, who are the rest of the Flyers forwards beyond those five? Anybody else on the
There's
Flyers?
Not a whole heck of a
Anything
lot.
Else there scare you in terms of Flyers forwards?
Simmonds, Konechny.
Yeah, Konechny, okay.
The occasional Michael Raffle shot.
Nolan
Patrick will eventually.
Yeah, Patrick was one of the five guys that I was saying. Konechny makes six. I do admit you got me on that one. I forgot to Konechny. But it's really six guys up front who can do any level of damage in this series. They do have a strong defense. Ivan Provorov's a stud back there, two-way defender. They do have Shane Gostisbehere, who had a great season. I think he scored 17 goals this year. So they've got some offense from the back end, but just up front, they don't match with what the Penguins can bring.
No, no, and that will be the downfall. At the end of the day, we're seeing it in the Jets series. We're seeing it all over in this postseason, I should say. Depth is what gets you to the next round, and the next round after that, and the next round after that. It's having 12 guys who can score and who can play at a consistently strong level.
All right, so moving from that series to, and we've gone through the Kincaid-Schneider issues. What about Washington? They are going with Philip Grubauer in game two. He's been the better goalie down the stretch. He gave up 5 goals in game one in an overtime loss to Columbus. Must win game two for the Capitals. You never want to go down 2-0. Worst of all would be going down 2-0 at home. Is going back to Grubauer the right move for Washington?
I don't love it, but I don't think it was all on him in game one either.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to say here because I don't have full faith in Holtby. I don't necessarily have full faith in Grubauer either. And I do rate Grubauer. Right? I think he's one of the better backups in the league and near or if not starter quality for another team. Holtby is not Holtby at the moment. You know, there's some serious questions about that. So at the end of the day, I don't hate it. I'm not confident in it at all, but I don't hate it.
Yeah.
I know that's a cop-out answer.
I think you've got to go with Grubauer for game two. If you lose game two, that's the moment that I think I bring Holtby back in. Is if I'm down 2-0. But I think I'm going to go with Grubauer in game two. But again, Grubauer has been better, and he's always been a .920 save percentage goalie. Now, you can say he's faced easier competition over the course of his career as a backup. He's getting the choice games for the most part. He hasn't down the stretch here for Washington in this season. As he's been out playing Holtby for quite a while. But over the, if you're looking at the 4-year sample size, you could say, you know what, he's gotten a lot of the choice games on the back-to-back. He gets the easier of the two games, and that's true. Holtby, to me, has been one of the best goalies in the NHL the last few years and just wasn't this year. So I think if I had to get in a situation where Grubauer has lost 2 games, then I might go to Holtby. But I think if you start Grubauer in game one, you can't be second-guessing yourself after just one loss. You've got to take things a little bit further than that.
I agree completely. And I think you need more from your defense than that.
Yes. Yeah, you need to do more. You've got to... Columbus runs through Artemi Panarin. You've got to do a better job on Artemi Panarin than what they did, especially at home where you get the matchup and you get to dictate some of the play. You've got to... That was one of the issues I had with Columbus and with believing in them in the playoffs is that they're so reliant on one player and don't necessarily have the depth scoring or the depth, especially at center ice, to really believe in them as a playoff team. And I think that Washington has to do a better job on shutting down their one big gun who happens to be a winger who they should be able to shade some of their defense towards and take him out of the play.
Easily. It shouldn't be as difficult as they've made it. And that just says a lot about how incredibly talented Artemi Panarin is. We had two more series to get to, and they're both fairly similar, I think, in that the Sharks and the Knights have looked significantly better than their opponents.
Yeah.
And I think surprisingly so.
Well,
to a certain extent, like, I get that LA is only Jonathan Quick, Anze Kopitar, and Drew Doughty, and, you know, 19 players who you could fill with Guy. But in the San Jose Anaheim series, I was a little more surprised. I expected a better showing out of the Ducks.
Yes, I'm really surprised by the San Jose Anaheim series. And I've got that game on right now. It's in the second period of game two. And the Sharks are up 3-1 and are pretty much having their way with the Ducks at this point, and had their way with the Ducks in a 3-0 win in the first game. Again, the depth up forward has been a bit surprising for me that San Jose has looked this much better than Anaheim. I would have thought Anaheim had a deep forward group with guys like Silverberg, Rickard Rakell, obviously Getzlaff, Nick Ritchie,
Andre Kass.
You know, there's a lot to like on that Anaheim team, and their defense is generally pretty deep and strong as well. I would not have pegged this series to go the way that it's going, but San Jose has looked like the better team, and guys like Logan Couture and Joe Pavelski have come to play.
Yep, it's as simple as that. It's surprising. I had Anaheim pegged as my Western Conference finalist, just because of I don't have a lot of faith in that you know, that quarter of the bracket. But it's been very surprising. The Golden Knights a little less so. We know how good they've been at home. LA really is just three players this year.
The first game was much closer than the second game, even though the second game went to double OT. The first game had Drew Doughty in it, and it also had Jake Muzzin in it. So in game
two, a big difference.
In game two, I was not I called the Kings to have their way with the Golden Knights in this series, and I still think the Kings might win this series based on game one and based on getting Doughty and hopefully Muzzin back. But, you know, the game two defense was basically Alec Martinez, Dion Phaneuf, and four rookies, pretty much. Kevin Gravel, I know, is not quite a rookie, but four really young, inexperienced defensemen, and not guys who are generally regarded as high-end prospects. I mean, Paul Ledoux is all right. Kevin Gravel, again, all right. It just was a really weak group of six defensemen overall, and they asked a lot out of Martinez, who played over 44 minutes in that game, double overtime game, and asked a lot out of Dion Phaneuf, which we know you cannot expect Dion Phaneuf to be a number one guy. We've seen that in Ottawa. We've seen that in Toronto. He's a number three, and so, or a number four on LA with, and they were asking him to be a number two, and he's just not that. I know they were playing on two separate pairs, but, that's kind of where, I saw, things for LA kind of fall apart in game two.
It very much comes down to a terrifying lack of depth. And I'm with you in that I still am hesitant after 84 games now to hop on the Golden Knights train. At the same time, though, they're up 2-0 in the series.
One thing the Knights have impressed me with is all of their forwards are fast. Like, all of their forwards. You know, it's not one, and we've talked so much about speed in this podcast, and I think that that's the name of the NHL this year, and the NHL's trend going forward has been that way the last few years. But the Knights team is very, very quick.
Sorry, the last few years? Didn't you see how Peter Chiarelli rebuilt the Oilers? That's clearly not the case. Big and strong is the way to go.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you want to be in the Dallying and Jack Hughes sweepstakes, build a big and strong and slow team. And you might have a 20% chance of getting Jack Hughes extra. Or 18.5 or whatever it is. Yeah.
Oh, God. I hope Ottawa doesn't finish 31st last year and miss out on Jack Hughes. I'll just cry.
Yeah. I mean, they've announced that they're not
going to. Top five.
Yeah. Well, the Oilers signed a little bit of speed today.
It's true. It's true. Ty Ratty, 800K.
Yeah, I think that's a good deal for them. He had 9 points in 14 games. My question is, why did he only play 14 games?
Best question out there. Not really sure, but it's a good question to be asking.
Why did Ty Ratty only play 14 games for the Oilers this year? I've always thought he had some potential. I know he hasn't lived up to it, but when you were as thin on the wings as the Oilers were this year, you'd think that guy would get a little bit of a chance.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to wrap this with, who is your cup?
The Ducks just missed tying this game, just to update on where we are.
Anaheim. Killing me here.
They just put one off the post. They got it to 3-2 and just put one off the post. So,
who was your cup pick to before the playoffs started?
I had Nashville over Tampa.
As did I. Who's your cup pick now?
I'm going to stick with Nashville over Tampa. I mean, neither of my teams has lost a game yet, so I can't switch off either of them at this point.
I'm with you on that one. I'm much less confident in it than I was to start. Boston and Winnipeg have just looked so good.
No, well, Boston and Winnipeg have looked so good, and that does scare you a little bit. But, I mean, as we said, Nashville and Tampa have not looked bad. Tampa's run over New Jersey.
Yeah. It's going to be an awesome semifinal. Semifinal. It's too bad those couldn't be the conference finals.
Yeah, that's a bit unfortunate, but that's the way the NHL has things lined up this year. We will have the top 2 point scoring teams in the league likely playing in the second round, and then the top 2 point getting teams in the other conference, 3 and 4. We'll have 1 versus 2 and 3 versus 4 in terms of overall NHL standings playing each other in the second round of the playoffs.
Thanks. This way it builds division rivals.
Okay. Although if you're a Metro Division fan, you could make the argument, you know, we play more games in the division and you guys get Detroit, Montreal, Buffalo and Ottawa on your schedule more times than we do get those 4 teams.
That's true. But there was a significant gap.
Yeah, it was a bigger gap than the number of extra games there, but still. I mean,
still, that's fair.
Yeah, that might be one of the arguments is the unbalanced schedule. Anyways, we have gone right up to our 1 hour time limit. So, Colton, what's going on at Last Word on Hockey right now? What are some of the posts you would recommend people read?
Ooh, that's a good one. I like their playoff and end of the year coverage that's come out so far. We haven't had a ton of it, but I've liked it so far. Big fan of the Evgeny Dadonov article that came out. Was that today?
Yeah,
yes, it was today. Yeah, by Alex. Fantastic. I'm a big fan of Evgeny Dadonov, so I enjoyed reading about him. Outside of that, not a ton that I've been able to read. As some of you may know, I've had a rather hectic week here in my 9-to-5 in Saskatchewan working for the news. As you can imagine, it's been quite busy.
Yeah, a lot of hockey news out of Saskatchewan. I feel remiss that we're only mentioning it now, but obviously
Our hearts as hockey fans go out to the families of the players out in Humboldt. Obviously, we are part of the bigger hockey community and feeling that. I know we've made that clear on our website over the past week, and you've done a ton of work. You're out covering funerals out in Humboldt. So it's been a tough week, certainly, for you, and anybody can check out that coverage on Global National. They had to show up from Friday, I see, on their website. So if you want to check out Colton doing that, very tough work, obviously. So for someone who's listening to this podcast, I want people to know we haven't forgotten about the people in Humboldt. There's been plenty of coverage of it on our website, and you've done plenty of coverage with your work with Global as well. So
yeah, you guys did a fantastic job on it, and I wish I had more time to contribute to it.
You got to cover it on TV. We've covered it in print. It's you know, it is what it is. Great news is that they're up over, I believe, 12 million today. Their GoFundMe, so build some tributes to that team. That team will never be forgotten. The family shouldn't have to pay a dime for any of these funeral expenses or anything like that. Which obviously, you know, families don't save for. You save for funerals when you're, you know, in retirement age. You don't save for funerals when you're a junior hockey player. So the families will have to, shouldn't have any expenses with these this tragedy. And of course, the therapy that's going to be needed, the rehab for those who are coming through it. And we've seen some players in wheelchairs and the amount of physio that they're going to need, the amount of mental therapy as well to be one of the survivors, I'm sure cannot be easy.
No, it can't be. These guys have gone through hell and back, and so have their families. So.
Okay. All right. So I think we'll end it there and dedicate this podcast to the 16 whose lives were unfortunately lost a little over a week ago.
I'm good with that.
All right. Good night, everyone. Take care.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.